Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Joining me in studio today, co-host, producer and host of World Lutheran News, Kip Allen. Kip, good to have you with me today.
Thank you very much, Andy. Glad to be here.
We've got timely information today. We've got some conversations to get to today. How timely with all the chaos that's going on around us today, and just learned there's an armed intruder drill going on as we speak at the high school right next door to our studios here in St. Louis, Missouri. And so today we're going to talk about the issues that surround this. We're going to talk with Pastor Kurt Onken from Messiah Lutheran Church in Marysville, Washington. You probably remember back in October, the school shooting that happened there. And seems to be, you know, when back in the 90s when a school shooting happened, it was a surprise. Now we don't seem as surprised or shocked when it happens.
I think you're right, Andy. I remember the Columbine shooting. I was working at a radio station out in California when it happened. And you know, everyone was just stunned that something like that could
It was unthinkable.
Occur. Yeah. It was. It was. You know, times change. I'm somewhat older than you. I remember as a child, we used to have air raid drills in the elementary school. You know, the old duck and cover.
Yeah.
Not that it would do much good against an atomic bomb, but...
certainly times have changed. Our society has changed. The way our worldview has changed, and some due to technology and things that affect our... just our behavior and how we interact with one another, and certainly tragedies like this. It's sad that it's become that we've become somewhat jaded toward these acts of violence to some degree. They're nonetheless still very saddening and frightening, especially for parents when these happen in school. So we're going to talk with Pastor Onken here in just a little bit about that, and then during the second half of the program, we're going to talk with Reverend Dr. David Ludwig, licensed psychologist and professor and LCMS minister on this issue. He's written, he's an author as well, and written some great resources and materials to help us look at things from both the social sciences, from the psychological perspective, as well as from the scriptures. And so we're going to talk with him as well during the second half of this program.
I think that's a very interesting approach to take. Has there been some kind of a shift in our national psyche where suddenly these things are happening? As you pointed out, I certainly don't recall mass shootings in schools in the 50s or the 60s.
And particularly, how has society... perhaps shaped boys. If you look at a common theme in these shootings, quite often they're boys during adolescence, early adolescence. Yet generally it's males in early adolescence that are the perpetrators in these school shootings. So we're going to talk more with Dr. Ludwig about that here in the second half of the program. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting Worldwide KFUO and this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at our website. Go to kfuo.org and look for CUW in the look for that CUW logo in the sponsor section there, and you can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin. Joining us by phone this morning, the Reverend Kurt Onken, pastor at Messiah Lutheran Church in Marysville, Washington. Good morning, Pastor Onken.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us today and starting your day. I know it's a little bit earlier there on the West Coast, so we appreciate you spending some time with us this morning to share with us about the Messiah Lutheran Church and the community there in Marysville, Washington. Tell us a little bit about Messiah Lutheran Church, and we'd also like to learn about the community of Marysville.
Yeah, Messiah Lutheran Church, we've been here since 1957. We are about 40 miles north of Seattle, right on the I-5 corridor. We're just a few miles north of Everett, Washington. There's a big naval base there, aircraft carriers based there, the USS Nimitz. And there's a Boeing facility, a large Boeing facility in Everett. So our community is somewhat of a bedroom community for people that work in Seattle and Everett, and especially at the Boeing plant there, and also lots of Navy workers, also people that are actively on active duty, and also support staff too. And so I think our community is about 60,000 people. I think that's about the number of folks we have living here, something like that. And so it's lots of single family dwellings and multi-family dwellings, and kind of the whole gamut of the socioeconomic level too. It's a very diverse community considering where we're located here.
How would you describe how Messiah Lutheran Church fits in that community, the relationship of the congregation to the community? How would you paint that picture?
Well, we are right on Old Highway 99, which is now State Avenue, and we're not a large congregation, not a large building. We have about an average of 130, 140 people that attend on a Sunday morning, and we have a. We're to be really honest. It's interesting how people can drive by this busy boulevard, and when I I've been here for 14 years, and when I tell people where we're located, they go, "There's a church on that corner. I didn't realize that." And I don't know why that is, because I mean our folks are very interested in serving the community, and. Recently, I think we've become a little bit more proactive about that. We've been reaching out to some of the local agencies, the social service agencies and so forth, educational institutions, and asking what are some of the underserved needs that we can do to help meet some of those needs. So we've been a little bit more active in doing that. But, yeah, it's interesting how, I mean, we've been here for so long, and right in this little corner, it's amazing how some people, well, I think, you know, people are just busy. They're on their way somewhere else, and they just don't notice our building. And then also considering that this is one of the more unchurched areas in the nation, the state of Washington, the Northwest, you know, people don't notice those things, and they just drive around by. So, so we're working on becoming more visible and more proactive and reaching out to the neighborhood here. And obviously, sadly, this incident has given us a little bit more visibility because we did get some news coverage.
Let's talk about that. Let's go back to October. I believe it was October 24th. Is that correct?
Yes.
How did your day begin? What is it, you know, a typical day like for the pastor there at Messiah Lutheran Church in Marysville, Washington?
There's no such thing as a typical day, right? But actually, my Fridays, it was a Friday, my Fridays are a little bit unusual. My children attend the Lutheran school that our congregation is a member of, an association of congregations that operates a private Lutheran school, Zion Lutheran School in Lake Stevens, a neighboring community. And it's about a 20-minute drive from here. And I usually take my children there, and then I hole up at the library in Snohomish, another community. And they have an early release that day, so I just stay in the area, and I kind of hole up, and I tell my secretary I'm going dark, and I try to finish my sermon for Sunday, so I can take Saturday off with the kids if I'm able to. They're 8 and 9, are their ages. So I was in the library actually when I don't remember exactly how I heard. I may have gotten a phone call from our church secretary that heard about it in the news, or maybe somebody texted me. Again, I don't recall. And but then I got online at the library, looking at the news and seeing what was going on, and then I immediately started trying to contact the parents of the kids. Who we have four children. We have probably about a dozen high school kids in our congregation that go to various high schools in the area. We have two high schools here in Marysville and an arts and technical high school. But we draw from all the different communities around here. So, but we had four that are attending Marysville Pilchuck High School where the shooting occurred. So I tried to contact them, the parents, and also it was like I got on Facebook too. Amazing how social media can help you with these things too. And some parents that I could get a hold of were posting, you know, I heard from so-and-so, they're all right. But we're heading up there to try to get in touch with them and get them. But all the kids were, you know, running. And, some were locked down in some of the buildings, and then they were ushered out, and they were bused over to another local church, and then that's where the parents were notified to come pick up their children.
At that point in time, did you have, you had heard that there was a shooting? Did you know many of the details? You mentioned that you had heard that the children were from your congregation were okay. Did you know any of the other details at that point in time?
Trying to think back. I don't know if any real details were available yet. And of course, you know, kids were texting like mad and mm-hmm. putting things on Facebook and Twitter, and there's lots of rumors that were flying around about what happened.
Sure.
And I really can't tell you. I can't remember exactly when I heard more details. Obviously, you know, later throughout the day we did, and after I got in touch with the parents on the phone and were assured that their children were all right, and when I got home that early that afternoon, I immediately tried to visit with the families and see how they were doing, the kids, our children, and met with them in their homes, some that evening, some the next morning. One of our young ladies, a 14-year-old freshman girl, she was in the cafeteria about 10 feet away from the shooting, witnessed the first shots and immediately dove under the table and then started running with the rest of her friends. And so so that was the first family, of course, that I reached out to try to visit with them one-on-one and spent some time with them that afternoon. She was seemingly doing okay, more than the other kids who mm-hmm. were not in the cafeteria from our congregation. And, you know, I suppose that's maybe to be expected. I think she was in a little bit of shock over what had happened, and that's the way she was processing it. So we were keeping a very close eye on her to see how she was going to manage this, and checking in with them. And I think it was just a few days ago, maybe last week, her dad, who's an elder of our congregation, told me that that she had some kind of a flashback in one morning and really scared her. And so she told her folks about it, and I guess she just had this vivid flashback of what had occurred. I suppose that's pretty typical for mm-hmm. What is that, some of the post-traumatic stress incidents that that people deal with.
How, in your interactions with the parents, and you shared with us the students, how did the parents handle this? I can't imagine as a parent, you know, what this would be like, and you're a parent too, what this would be like, the fear that and all the things that probably go through their minds, knowing that there's a tragedy, violence happening at their child's school, and finding out about it by whatever means, whether it's social media or a phone call or an automated call, those types of things. How are the parents doing? How did it go that day, and how are they doing now?
They were, of course, quite terrified, and I can't blame them. I remember when the Newtown shooting occurred, and thinking about how I would have handled that with my own children, and of course the magnitude of that was quite different. And but nevertheless, you know, you're thinking about your children, and
sure.
that changed the whole procedure of the way they handled things at our children's school as well. At the private school, all the buildings are locked down now. You have to get permission to go into their rooms, other buildings. And so they, of course, were very frightened and concerned. I guess that is one of the blessings of cell phones in these days, that they could immediately get in touch with their children. And even one of the young ladies who did not have her phone with her, was left in her locker, she was able to, you know, contact her parents using her friend's phone. So pretty soon they were able to hear from their children and find out they were okay. Although I imagine, I mean, even if it was a half an hour before they heard, that's an eternity, right? Waiting, mm-hmm. waiting to hear from your child, wondering if yeah. they've been involved in this incident. But, I was trying to put myself in their shoes, and I just can't imagine until you're in those shoes, in that situation.
Pastor Kip Allen here. My question is about the aftermath with the children. How did you, as a minister, as a father, how did you help to soothe these children, to reassure them? This had to have been the most terrifying experience of their young lives. How do you let them know that God loves them, that there's a reason for everything?
Well, I immediately tried to make myself available to them as their pastor and to let them know that we all care about them and love them and that God loves them through us. And, of course, I talked about the matters of how the fact that we live in a broken world and these things happen. There is terrible sin in the world. And, you know, the old adage, we hear people say after some terrible event, I never thought it could happen in my community or my neighborhood. And, of course, I always say I'm not surprised when something like this happens because we are so wretchedly sinful. Mm-hmm. And things in anybody can, people can crack at a moment's notice because of that sin. And but I tried to assure them of God's presence in the midst of suffering, that the most, you know, the worst suffering in the world that ever occurred was how our innocent Lord Jesus was brutally beaten and unjustly tried and nailed to a cross to suffer for our sins. That's quite the injustice, isn't it? But nevertheless, it was God's justice for us placed upon His Son so that we could go free and forgiven. And that was God's love to the uttermost in the midst of suffering.
Pastor,
and of course, Jesus conquered that death and suffering for us when He rose again. So I really try to emphasize that with the children, that that even in the midst of suffering and sadness and really terror, that God is still with us, loving us in the midst of that.
Pastor, one thing I noticed that had been done in your area was the use of comfort dogs. I've seen this before in other communities, and they have done some wonderful work. There's an old saying, you know, that dogs are God's way of showing us that we're supposed to be loved. And I was wondering about how you were able to use the comfort dogs to help the children.
They were present at the prayer service that we had on Monday night following the shooting. They came out from Lutheran Church Charities in Chicago. And I had never had much experience with the comfort dogs, and I didn't quite know what to expect. But they were present. They were so well-behaved, even in the church service. It was amazing. They were sitting in the back, and I don't know if it was my sermon that lulled them to sleep or not, but they were... But they were there, and then they were present in the little social hour that we had afterwards, interacting with the folks that were there. And you know, I really don't know if our kids that were involved, if they had much interaction with the dogs after that night. But they were here in the community the rest of the week, and they were present at various locations where people gathered, and students from the school would gather. I saw some amazing responses to these dogs and heard some stories, too, from the handlers when I could not be with them. They went out to the memorial that was out in front of the high school, and they were present there throughout the week at different times. And I was told that there was a young lady who was in the cafeteria at the time that since Friday of the shooting had not left her mother's side. When they went there and they saw the comfort dogs, she was allowed to take one of the dogs for a walk, the young lady, and was able to leave her mother's side for the first time since the shooting. Hmm. There was also an incident where, of all things, some fourth and fifth grade kids from a local elementary school. They're special ed kids. They've got some emotional issues. Some of them have been abused. Some are foster kids. They were actually at the high school pool and locked down there for 6 hours on the day of the shooting. It's kind of a reward for good behavior, and they get to go there on Fridays. They get bussed over there. So there was eight of them. I happen to know one of the special ed teachers, and she and I had got in touch with one another, and she said, boy, it would be really neat to bring the dogs over there to the school, and the principal gave permission, and they brought the dogs over there, and I was able to go with them and see the response of these kids, because I guess they were pretty traumatized by this whole event, as you can imagine.
Sure.
And one boy who had not stopped shaking since the shooting, when the dogs were there, he stopped shaking. One boy seldom smiles, but he certainly never smiled, had not smiled since the day of the shooting. He was all smiles around the dogs. One boy who was a relative of one or two of the victims, he would not even come into the room where the dogs were. He stayed in another room. And they finally convinced him to have just one dog brought in. So one of the handlers came in with one of the other dogs, and I did not see this, but they told me this later, that that the boy laid down on the floor with the dog and cuddled up with him and began to sob. And that was the first time he'd cried since the event. Hmm. So, you know, I guess I look at it as these are some of God's wonderful first article gifts that can help people begin their healing process in whatever way they need to, and they're grieving. And at the same time, you know, when they know this is done with in the name of Christ and with the love of Christ, that hopefully they can begin to also hear about God's second article gifts. And certainly the handlers and then myself, we tried to do that when the time was right and opportune in the community that week.
You certainly received support from others. The example of Lutheran Church Charities sending the comfort dogs to help in this difficult time after this tragedy. Did you receive other support from others to help in the healing?
I did. The first phone call that I received was from Pastor Ron Norris. He is our district, our Northwest District Disaster Response Chaplain. And he called me and asked if he could do anything. And then I heard from Ross Johnson, the LCMS Disaster Response Executive Director. And so they were present at our church service on Monday night, also giving resources to the folks that gathered there, and just welcome and prayers on behalf of the Synod. So that was terrific to have their support. Mm-hmm. Of course, a host of phone calls and emails. One of the most meaningful ones for me was Pastor Ron, is it Rob Morris, I believe, from Newtown, Connecticut. His congregation was severely affected by the Sandy Hook shooting, and he emailed me and said he was praying for us and that whatever he could do to help us through this situation. And I thought that was incredibly meaningful. Again, I shared with him too that, wow, you know, of course our event was nothing like yours. The magnitude and the nature of it too was different. I mean, that was a random shooting by someone who was mentally disturbed, and this was a kind of a family conflict that occurred. But nevertheless, I really appreciated his reaching out to us. That was very, very meaningful.
Looking back now, a little over a month since then, and what has, with just about a minute left, what has changed since that day for your congregation, for your community? Has anything, even in the midst of pain and loss, is there anything good that has come from this?
The community has certainly rallied around the high school, and it is a tight-knit community to begin with. Lots of folks have settled here and have lived here for many, many years, and so there is this real connection to the community. Like I said, I've been here for 14 years, and so I've developed some roots here also. It's interesting with our congregation, too, since we draw from such a large geographical area and the surrounding communities, that some of them don't have the same kind of connection to the community itself as they do to our congregation. But I still think, though, that it has made us aware of the ways in which we can reach out with the mercy of Christ to our community, even if we do happen to live in the neighboring community or two communities over. But it has certainly made us aware of... certainly the the effects of sin in the world. Once again, we're always reminded of this. You just turn on the news and you see it, but that it hits right home too. Our Snohomish County has been hit so hard too. We had a big landslide up 20, 30 miles up the road too, in a little valley community, so there was a big, big disaster there that affected our region. So there was kind of this cloud over the region because of all of these events. But nevertheless, I think it's drawn us together to try to serve our neighbor with love and with the love of Christ.
Our guest today, Pastor Kurt Onken, pastor at Messiah Lutheran Church in Marysville, Washington. Pastor Onken, thanks for being our guest on Faith and Family today and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to talk with Reverend Dr. David Ludwig, licensed psychologist and professor and LCMS minister on this very issue as well, violence and teens. Does our society set up boys for disaster, for failure? Stick around for more Faith and Family right after this on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Here's more encouraging news from Chile. This country ended abortion in 1989. Afterward, research showed an improvement in women's health and a decrease in abortion-related deaths of women. Pro-abortion activists say we must have legal abortion because women will be injured when resorting to illegal abortion. Chile's new research shows the opposite. Complications from illegal abortion that requires hospitalization have decreased by 20% over the last decade. The research also shows 70% of women who became unexpectedly pregnant wanted an abortion because of coercion and fear. And programs for these vulnerable abortion-minded women prevented a vast majority of illegal abortions. Good work, Chile.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
KFUO celebrates our 90th anniversary. On December 14th, 1924, from a small attic studio in St. Louis, KFUO was heard for the very first time. Our founders used the motto, keeping forward, upward, and onward, to go along with the call letters assigned at the station. And from that day on, KFUO has moved forward through each decade, proclaiming a Christ-centered message. We've moved upward with broadcasting in AM, FM, HD, and satellite syndication of KFUO programs. Worldwide KFUO continues to move onward, using today's technologies including internet streaming, on-demand programs, and podcasting. The mission of that first day is the mission we have today. Go out and proclaim the gospel. Now, through the end of January, join us for fun and memories during this 90-day celebration with a new theme each week, reflecting on our 90 years of ministry. KFUO, the messenger of good news.
It's not too late to celebrate Refugee Sunday. Throughout their 75th year, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service and thousands of congregations across the country are celebrating the gifts migrants bring to the United States through Refugee Sunday. Special LCMS resource kits, including video, bulletin inserts, and posters, are available for planning discussion, prayer, and action. More information at lirs.org/Sunday Kit.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, inviting all college students and those with an interest in campus ministry to join us for Taboo, the 2015 National LCMS Campus Ministry Conference, this coming January 5th through 7th at St. Louis University in St. Louis. That's right, it's Taboo in the Lou. Find out more at lcms.org/LCMSU.
Finding just the right partner is a blessing when it comes to achieving God's plans. Hi, I'm Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Before taking this position, I worked with LCEF in my home congregation. It was a joy to find a true Lutheran partner that understood our unique needs as we built a school and welcomed new families into our church and community. I hope you experience that joy too. Visit lcef.org to find out how your ministry can become empowered in its kingdom work.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. My co-host joining me today for Faith and Family, Kip Allen, producer and host of World Lutheran News. Good to have you side by side with me today.
Well, thank you very much, Andy. Pleased to be here.
What a story from Pastor Onken of both tragedy and also the healing and recovery that's happening there.
Wasn't that amazing? And I was especially moved by the description of how the comfort dogs help these children recover, especially the special education children.
And every time that I have a chance to talk with them, with Tim Hetzner from Lutheran Church Charities and the work of the comfort dogs that they're doing, it's always the same story time and again that in these tragedies, in these difficult times, the response that we have, that we as humans have to the comfort dogs is just, it allows us to, it somehow helps us to open up. As Pastor Onken said, those first article gifts, when we look at the Creed and the creation around us that God has provided for us, looking at things like this that we don't necessarily always understand how it works, but God uses these first article gifts to help us open up healing, that emotional healing that needs to happen. Well, speaking of not necessarily understanding everything when it comes to the psychology of it and the emotions of it, we're going to go to the pro today. We're going to go to Reverend Dr. David Ludwig. He is a licensed psychologist, professor of psychology at Lenoir Ryan University in Hickory, North Carolina, and LCMS minister and returning guest to Faith and Family, also author. We've talked about some of his writing as well, and has just really helped us understand some of these difficult things. Dr. Ludwig, welcome back to Faith and Family. Good to hear your voice and talk with you again today.
Thanks, Andy. It's good to be back.
Tell us, for our listeners not fully familiar with your background in psychology, tell us a little bit about your background and your area of interest in psychology, what you have enjoyed studying most and when it comes to those sciences.
Yes. I went to both Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and then Washington University and got both degrees, both in divinity and in psychology. And then I became a pastor, but also taught in our Missouri Synod system for a while. And my passion was to try to blend these two areas together, because they mix like oil and water, generally. And especially interested in the family unit itself and how God and His wisdom created this and how it's the basis for all mental health and wellness. And we're pretty fascinated with the human spirit, too, that we are God-breathed. We're not naturally selected like the culture would tend to suggest. But God breathed into us the breath of life. And so the human spirit is an awesome creative force and really not intended to be private. We were intended to be in relationship with one another and intended to love one another and serve one another, not to be self-centered. And so with that, you know, you can begin to see that anytime the culture gets more self-centered or isolates people or the family unit breaks down, now you start having the problems that we face in our culture today.
And the very things that you just mentioned are a lot of the topics that you and Dr. Jacob address in your recent book, Christian Concepts for Care. I really enjoyed our conversation about that not too long ago and enjoyed reading it. And I think that, I mean, that's certainly a resource we can recommend for families who are thinking about these issues that we're talking about today and the school shootings, the tragedies. Anytime the tragedy strikes, how do we respond to that? How do we care for the people? That's certainly one of our concerns. But even to back up a little bit further and say what leads up to these is I think, a conversation we should be having. A few days after that, the school shooting in Marysville, Washington, a press release announced Dr. Gregory Jantz, a psychologist, author, and speaker, called for a new discussion, a national debate on how society has failed boys, in a sense, how we set boys up for failure. And I thought that was an interesting...
It was intriguing.
Yeah, it was very intriguing. It caught my attention right away and thought, okay, well, let's get into this conversation. Let's look at what leads up to these tragedies. there's obviously a root, and we know that sin is the root of all of these tragedies. But looking at these, I was pulling up some statistics earlier. Since 1992, I think it is, 1992, there have been over 300, it was like 387 shootings, I think,
wow.
In schools.
Wow.
Now, that's grade schools through universities, but
yeah,
it was...
Yeah, but that's a lot of...
Just in the U.S.
Uh-huh. Yeah. This is not really a normal thing that you would randomly attack people. That shows a high degree of dysfunction. I mean, in a matter of passion, if it's a buildup of resentment over a long period of time, you know, that's usually mm-hmm. where something like that happens. But this is right. This is something that is more a social epidemic.
It is, and it's, you know, Kip, you and I were talking about this yep. at the beginning of the program, how back in the 90s, in the early 90s, when something like this happened, it was unique and very, yeah. very frightening. But now it's when we hear it on the news, we're not surprised by it at
yeah.
all. We've almost become
more
jaded.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, we didn't have school shootings in the 50s and 60s, at least not that I recall. What has changed? What has happened?
Mm-hmm. Well, if I can comment on I've done a lot of thinking in this area. I think one of the things you have to understand is God's plan for the development of people, especially boys. And I think he's right in saying that the society is failing boys. It's very difficult for boys to achieve manhood. In fact, I think I find such a prolonged adolescence that, you know, boys are still in their 20s being boys, not settling down and getting married. But it seems like the adolescence goes on for 15 years now or more. And so what's going on? And so as I looked at this, I in the book that I wrote, I do a detailed look at the developmental process mm-hmm. where, you know, like a boy, the first years of life, he needs to feel attached, you know, like that, where the mother is very key, that he feels loved, attached, and then he gets into temper tantrum stage when he's 5 or 6, and he needs to feel that he's significant, but yet to experience good boundaries, mm-hmm. good healthy boundaries, where then when he gets 7, 8, 9, these boundaries translate into good internal control, where you know, he can stop himself, stop his impulses.
Self-regulate.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, self-regulate. And then you get 10, 11, 12, 13, then you're supposed to detach and form sort of an attitude. This is the beginning of the breaking away process. And then 14, 15, 16, you get enough energy to be able to face your parents and let them know that you are mature, and use this anger, so to speak, or this confidence, I call it, then to form your identity and launch into a mature manhood. Well, what happens so often is in our culture, there are many now pitfalls along the way where so many fathers are absent. There's not good modeling. Most boys do not get a blessing, you know. They don't have a rite of passage that they used to have, and a sense of blessing that their fathers would tell them, look, I'm proud of you, mm-hmm. I believe in you. And with absent fathers and the lack of a blessing, so many boys then get stuck in, you know, like in a pre-adolescent stage where they detach and go underground and, you know, hide their feelings. And then when they get an attitude and really get angry inside, then they're in more in a fantasy world yet. And they don't break out of that fantasy world, and they haven't gotten the blessing yet that makes them a man. And so now all the resentment mixes with the fantasy, and they probably work with tremendous amounts of video games, violent video games. And now comes a possibility that, you know, they just don't care. And now it just looks like exciting to them to shoot some people. And so you have this real weird sense of don't care, totally invulnerable, you know, it's like they're still in a fantasy world. And as a result, then, they start doing things that put them further and further in on the road to a prison or, some violence or something like that, just to prove their manhood.
Hmm.
And so as a result, I see the breakdown of the family unit, the lack of fathers, the lack of a blessing given to them, the lack of good boundaries, you know, the lack of good communication within the family, the ease at which they keep everything private, you know, all of these things, you know, so much TV watching and everything else as a lethal mix That makes it very difficult for boys in our culture to achieve manhood.
Pastor, are you aware of any data on existing on how many of these shooters come from broken families?
No, that see the rates are a little bit puzzling in the data that I've looked at, because it looks like on the surface that some of these come from decent families. But then as you look a little deeper, you know, most of the time they peel away some of the layers on these people. You notice that there's virtually no family communication, and oftentimes an absent or unapproachable father.
Whether he's physically present, even if he's physically present, and he might be emotionally absent.
Absent and unapproachable, and certainly hasn't. I like this word blessing. Every kid that I've looked at that's a shooter, I've searched for any sense that they've gotten a blessing, you know, a sense that someone's told them, look, we believe in you. And almost inevitably, it's like they're stuck back in a fantasy world where they haven't gotten that blessing. And so all their emotional excitement comes from violence and imagining violence and, you know, all the games that are available. So, and of course, all the sexual stuff that's available, that's like a lethal mix of taking all their energy that's supposed to be there for confidence and growing up, all that energy gets turned back into themselves, which interestingly is the word for sin, incurvata sense. Remember we talked.
Right.
And so they get all wrapped up in themselves and feel invulnerable, and that's a pretty lethal mix. Because God gave the adolescent energy as a way to form your identity, gain confidence, and then become a man.
I've often thought that the difference between the child and the adult is when the person realizes that he is mortal. I know in my own situation, I was in a motorcycle accident when I was 19 years old.
And, oh my gosh. You grew up then, I bet.
I grew up. That was the point when I realized I could die. And I like to say, you know, the child died that day, the man was born.
Yeah, exactly. There are actually two things. One is knowing that you're mortal. The second thing is beginning to be more concerned about others than yourself.
And until the boy receives that blessing, that encouragement from parents or father figure, to say, you know, we're proud of you. Go and do what you're given to do.
We believe in you. Go and with God, you know, do what God intends you to do or be.
Until that happens, until those things happen, until we see that we're mortal and that we're given for a time to do these things, and until that happens, what I understand you to be saying is we kind of get stuck in the previous stage and kind of living in a distorted world or a fantasy world.
Yeah, fantasy world. If you know, 11, 12-year-olds love these fantasy games.
Sure.
You know, Dungeons and Dragons and all that stuff. It used to be very popular. Now it's all the video games. That's where they get all their emotional excitement, and these become semi-real to them.
And then
as they get 14, 15, they're supposed to get out of this. Okay, now social interaction should become much more interesting and maturing and becoming a man. But if they stay stuck here, all of that energy, which is really an attitude, it really starts coming, I don't care attitude, which makes them feel totally invulnerable. That's really what mixes with the fantasy and violence, and now you've got 17, 18-year-olds or even earlier picking up guns and just don't care. You know, they get mad, they get their parents, pissed them off or something like that. Excuse the language, because that's what I hear all the time. And then, boom, you know, now they don't care. They just grab a gun or they plot something or something like that.
Could part of it have been the shift in education to do self-esteem and to feel good about themselves? You know,
that all goes along with the whole cultural obsession with self and taking selfies and, you know, promoting self. You know, it further makes it difficult for the adolescent to break out of the self-centered mode into the mature man, which, you know, we can see in Scripture. You know, like the husband, what does he do? He gives up his ego for his wife, like Christ did for the church. He would sacrifice himself. See, that's the mature man. And those are really powerful, good feelings when you're sacrificing yourself for someone else. And they never get that. And so all the energy that they have for that turns inward and now becomes, I don't care attitude and a defiance.
The world's worldview, the world's way of looking at things has certainly one way, and that's what really influences our education system in terms of how young men and young women are shaped. Some of the statistics that Dr. Gregory Jantz pointed out in his call for this national debate on how society has failed young men, here are some of the statistics that mm-hmm. he pointed out in that. 70% of D's and F's in school are given to boys. 77% of expulsions are boys. 80% of all disciplinary referrals are boys. 67% of all children held back in class are boys. 73% of children diagnosed with learning disabilities are boys. 81% of suicides ages 10 to 19 are boys. 80% of diagnosed behavioral disorders are boys. 80% of children on Ritalin are boys. And a side note, the U.S. consumes 80% of the world's Ritalin. 89% of incarcerated youths ages 15 to 17 are males, and 33% of men ages 22 to 34 live at home with parents, a 100% increase in 20 years. No increase for women in that age range.
It's called a failure to launch, which means a failure to achieve manhood. And those statistics are very accurate. And it's interesting, I just talked yesterday to someone who has developed an incredible prison ministry. And he said when he started, he thought, how in the world, I'm a pretty sensitive guy, how in the world am I going to get through to these hardened criminals?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, every single one of them are just a little boy inside.
Hmm.
They're just yearning for someone to believe in them or yearning, but they don't trust anybody. And so they put up this harsh exterior. And they say, but he says the prison ministry is so exciting because he can get in touch with the little boy inside him, and then Christ makes some sense to him. Then if someone really cares about him, and they sense they can't manipulate him, wow, he says, you can see that tremendous good that you can do with people like this. And so I think we're just dealing with people a failure to launch, mm-hmm. and all of these statistics show that the anger and the energy of the boy, especially, that when he gets into adolescence, it's not there to help him mature and form an identity, but it gets turned inward into an I don't care attitude. Oh, and I forgot this. It's fueled by every single sitcom you see where the I don't care attitude is modeled. This is how you swagger, and this is
don't
how you
get me started.
And this is what you do as a sports figure. You swagger. You got an attitude.
That has been
trash. See,
that has been ever since I was a communications major as an undergrad, and ever since looking at mass media and looking at sitcoms. You hit the head of the nail right there. Sitcoms and most comedies, whether it's TV or movies, usually make the guy the buffoon, really downplay, especially the dad.
The dad's the buffoon, and then they model what I would call immature, rebellious behavior.
Brouch.
How do you swagger? How do you, flip people off? How do you talk trash?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we glorify it.
They don't have a model of a good dad who's got integrity and who's very honorable and keeps his word.
We do have those, but we look right past them.
You got it. You got it. And if there's anything that comes out of this conversation, it is, okay, that now the church should have a much better chance of being able to provide that model because the culture isn't going to.
Hmm. Well, that was going to
and
be...
So where in the church are the men that provide this model?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up question is what can we do to reverse this trend? How can we mm-hmm. set people back on the right track? And I think you've started to answer that.
Yeah, I think the first thing is to empower the males in our church to realize that they are critical, that they're modeling a sense of loving, caring, but yet firm manhood, so that their leadership, their spiritual leadership, that's I think the thing that's broken down the most. the whole sense of the man being the spiritual leader of the home, which of course doesn't fly in our culture because that puts down women or something like that.
You're right. Our culture, the world's worldview, the view of secular society is that everybody's the same, and therefore we don't all have different vocations based on our gender.
Oh boy! No, that's a hot button. That is a hot button.
Because if we do that, then that makes me better than you.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly,
it makes men better than women.
Supposedly, but if you look at scripture carefully, the leadership of the male, and that's a unique gift God's given, is a servant leadership.
And
it's a giving up of self and a totally protective and the like. And so it's really crazy, you know, that the whole sense of the male spiritual leadership should have to be so downplayed.
Well, just look at the mortality rates of men as opposed to women.
Yep.
That's one of the few areas where we do lead women. We die first.
Yeah, yeah. That's for sure.
Well, I think it is challenging for us when we look at the statistics, when we look at the numbers of young men and of boys, and it is frightening. But as you pointed out, Dr. Ludwig, if there's any change that's going to happen, it begins it begins in the church, where we have the gifts that God has given us to be men, to be faithful to our callings. It begins there. We can't look to society for those changes. We can't look to the world for those changes. It begins
exactly
with us.
And then, if I would also say, I think the youth groups in our church can be an incredible blessing, because so much of the dysfunction occurs when everything is kept private.
Mm-hmm.
So even if the kid doesn't have a very good home environment, or is sort of someone who, you know, hasn't had a chance to receive a blessing or something like that, these things can actually happen in the youth group, where you can have a really healthy, strong male youth leader. In this case, who can open up many conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had when our sons were growing up, I remember we had just a fabulous leader where our son, all of a sudden we realized that we didn't have to hound him. Okay, you have to go to youth group. Man, even before we knew it, he was ready to go and hopped in the car and ready to head to the youth group. And I asked him why. He said, "Dad, at school, I have to have a reputation. And so I can't talk about things I can talk about in the youth group. Boy, this youth group, we can talk about real stuff."
Oh, yeah. I remember the Walther League when I was growing up. That was very, very important to my youth.
So what I hear you saying is that in addition to faithful fathers living out their vocations, you know, as fathers live out their vocations faithfully and setting a meaningful example in the home of how they interact with their wives, the children's mothers, mm-hmm. and having a warm relationship with the children, also having other adults, especially faithful males in the congregation, like you said, a youth group leader, others who can have meaningful relationships with them, that certainly
right.
can make a difference as well.
Even have like an adopt a grandparent,
sure.
something like that.
Yeah.
You know, situations where the young person who's missed some of these stages actually feels that they're important to someone, actually feels they can talk over private stuff,
mm-hmm.
and actually has a model of what a male, healthy male looks like, who's really cares about others and you know, it can take a spiritual leadership position. So those are all the things that I think the church can move toward. And the exciting part is, wow, you know, so it's like the church will be a beacon on the hill if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that just doesn't happen in any other circumstance or many other circumstances. Mm-hmm. So this will make the church, you know, like the scripture says, it's like something that it's like salt that doesn't lose its savor or...
Our guest today, Reverend Dr. David Ludwig, licensed psychologist, professor of psychology at Lenoir Rhine University and LCMS minister. Thanks for being our guest today, Pastor.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word right here on listener-supported worldwide, KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program.
Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.